Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Here we are in the neighborhood today. We have our friends here with us. We have the man of faith over here. We have Bill Dallas. We have our All-American, Jack Patterson, and our beloved contrarian, Jim Giordano. How's everybody today?
Very good, Jeff.
Doing great.
Glad everybody's here. Now, for the neighborhood, I think one of the things that when we think about our neighborhood, we look around and we see family and we see friends, and it depends on where you live. I remember as a kid, I had a very big family, and my cousins were constantly over at my house. You know, they would all come around and swim in the pool because, you know, we put in an above-ground pool, and all the kids would come to swim all day long. And I'll never forget, my dad was a very hard-working man. He was an electrician, and he came home at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And my cousins would all be here, and my mom would be making lunch all day for all my cousins, my aunts, and everybody that would be here. And at 4:30, she'd start running around. All right, you got to pack up. You got to go because Joe's going to be home. Because when my father got home, he loved everybody. He didn't care, you know, use whatever we got here. But at 5 o'clock, he wanted it nice and quiet when he got in. He didn't want a house full of kids running around and people storming in and out the door. He wanted to relax. So I always think about the neighborhood, and that's one of the fondest thoughts that I have with my neighborhood. Which brings us to the topic for the neighborhood to start out with. We're going to talk about fathers and Father's Day, which just passed recently. Hope everybody had a good time with your dad. If your dad is still with you, you need to consider the fact that it is a tremendous blessing if your dad is still walking around on the planet with you. A lot of us don't have that luxury. Unfortunately, my father passed away at a very young age when I was a kid, and I've missed him ever since. But being a father myself, I've gone from my child perspective of missing my dad as to the perspective I have now, being a dad, how sad I am for him that he missed out on seeing his children grow up and all the accomplishments they've had. Because could you imagine him being so proud that I have this neighborhood of fellas sitting here on the radio? He would be very proud of that if he didn't slap me in the head for some of the things they say. So that's kind of what we want to talk about today, is fathers and Father's Day, the value of fathers. And it's interesting, the conversation we were having before this started, and it's going to lead right into the neighborhood. So, Jack, I know you wanted to kick us off, so go right ahead.
Yeah, we're discussing Father's Day. Problem with the word. Anybody, in my opinion, can be a father. It's just an act, and you can become a father. It takes time. It takes encouragement. It takes teaching, and it takes love to be a dad. And I think that's a lot of what we're missing these days. And I know Bill is going to speak on that to a greater degree.
So what you're saying, it sounds like, is that not just the part about the providing the baby batter, so to speak, to make the baby, but any man that steps in to act in the role of a father can have an important thing for kids.
Yeah, it's one thing to be a dad. It's totally another thing to just be a father. Right. Just to be somebody who made the child and has nothing to do in their lives. I think it should be called Dad's Day. But that's my viewpoint.
And Dad's Day.
And I want to pass it off to Bill because I know he's got a lot to say on that subject.
Well,
I don't think we're too far off.
Bill said when we're starting, he says, I have some rants I would like to go on. So without any further ado, the man of faith, let's hear it.
I'm going to step over here, Joe, while Bill goes off.
No, I read an article recently, and it was entitled, Do Children Really Need a Father? And that, first of all, that got me, my blood boiling. Of course kids need a father, whether it's a boy or a girl. So there's really a power that only a father can bring to his children. Anytime I see a movie or TV show that even remotely acknowledges that fact, I'm thankful. Because much of our media, they don't believe that a father is really beneficial to the family. And those that include dads in the script often portray him as an absolute idiot.
Right, but isn't it true that, you know, as we hear from the modern media and the modern world, that men are really just brutal? We mistreat everyone, we mistreat our children, we mistreat our wives and other people in our lives. So I think that's where that portrayal comes from. But I know what you mean. You see the daddy's an idiot in all these shows.
And that portrayal is sad. Actually, it's a disgrace, really. But let me tell you, the pattern in the beginning, you go all the way back to Genesis, and it says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. A man would leave his father and mother and take a wife. They'd be fruitful, and they'd multiply. The children would benefit from both parents, as each one would bring different and necessary facets to the child's life. This was the pattern for all marriages. This was the divine design. And I realize that the phrase power of the father might stir some less than desirable reactions from some, but power is a word that can be used for good or evil. Like you were talking about, abuse of that power is something completely different. But just because some have and will abuse that that reality behind the word, there's no need to write it off. God's word clearly indicates that men, and specifically fathers, bring power to the parenting relationship. The woman brings life. The father brings strength. There will be days when a mother brings strength to things, and there will be days when a man brings life. But the abiding power, the abiding pattern, the divine design, gives power to the father. The question is, as always, how will the power be used?
Ah, very interesting. And it's great that you give us that perspective, because let's go back to what, you know, what is the basis of this whole fatherhood, marriage, family type of thing. It's an interesting type of a topic because it's never been really in question like it is now. Jim, what do you think there?
Well, I think a family is a mother and a father. I recognize there's different types of families out there now, but the father brings balance to a family, and at least in my family, which is more traditional, the mother actually runs the show.
Of course.
And my kids would come to me for special problems, which they would not go to their mother, and vice versa. There are other things where they wouldn't even talk to me about, but they would always go to their mother. Father's love, you know, and that's very important. I think young boys nowadays are being raised in many households without the father, the power that Bill was alluding to. I don't particularly like that word, but it's the strength. And I think fathers give strength to the family, and these boys are not being raised appropriately, and that's why we have such a significant crime rate.
They don't have respect. They don't know respect, and therefore they don't act in respect. Now, it's funny when you said, you know, moms usually run things. It's very interesting. Think about, you know, the traditional home, and you're right. There was always a saying that, and I never forget, my aunt told me one time, she said, yep, the father is the head of the household. Absolutely. But the mother is the neck. And she turns the head whichever direction she wants it to go. And, you know, and this is the basis of our honey-do list and all of these kind of things, is that the mother is the central person in the family that decides which way the family goes. Then the father's the one, in my experience, that makes it happen. You know, I see, what do my kids need? They need to go to college. It's my wife who figures out what's the best college, where to go, and then we figure out how we're going to get that money to send them there. So it is a team, as Bill is talking about over there. So I find this, it's all strange to me that we have to even have these conversations at all. But Jack, who, you know, any, do you know anybody in that situation that acted as a father and they weren't necessarily the biological dad?
Well, yeah, I've known people in the past that have been the dad. You know, I've had them, as we alluded to before, when I was coaching soccer, I had some dads on the team that weren't the biological father to the child, but the child went to him as if he was, because mm-hmm. of the way he treated them, he was raising them, and the natural father in two of the circumstances that I'm talking about had nothing to do with the boy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was nice to see somebody step into that role who didn't necessarily have to.
Right.
But was more than willing, more than happy
so
to
that,
do it.
That's a very decent and difficult thing to do.
Very difficult.
It's one thing when your wife or your girlfriend, you know, ends up pregnant, and now you're going to be a dad because of your actions, and you have to either want that position or you step up to the plate. Or, unfortunately, like in when Jim is talking about, a lot of guys run the other way, and these kids are left on their own.
We know someone who had children at a very young age, was scared to death, and use that and his youth as an excuse to stay away from these children. Now that the children have now entered his life again, he's in his early 50s when these children entered his life again from the age of 17. And nobody could be any sorrier than that person.
Yeah, I know.
For waiting so long.
He's very much hurt and pained by the fact that as a kid, as a young person, he made decisions based on, it was scary, it was a huge responsibility, and basically the girl and her parents were okay with him stepping away. And he was like, well, I'm out from under. Basically, that's what it is. And that's what a lot of these young people, hey, I don't have to see it, I don't have to pay for it, I have to deal with it. And that's detrimental to the kids and to the person themselves.
He's experiencing the pain of having not been a dad.
Yeah.
He, of course, was a father. Biologically, he was a father. Mm-hmm. But he's now experiencing the pain of all these years of not having been a dad.
Right. And I'll throw out an homage right there. Like I said, my dad passed early. He was 37 years old when this poor guy died of a heart attack. But we had somebody here in the family, my Uncle Wally, Big Wally. He was really a great guy. He had his own son. Actually, he's one of those guys that when he married my Aunt Barbara, she already had a boy. My cousin Glenn was already alive. He was here. So Wally stepped in. They never had any other children. But he became my cousin's father in every absolute sense of the way. He was the boy's father. And after my dad passed, Wally and my Aunt Barbara were here every single Sunday to make sure that we were not alone. My mother wasn't alone. Me and my brother had somebody in the house, you know, keeping the family going. And I'll never forget, I played football, and we had a football banquet, you know, at the end of the year when the games are all over and you have the banquet and everybody goes out and has a hamburger, whatever they do, chicken salad, sandwich. And I didn't go to the banquet because it was a father-son banquet. And I said, you know, I'm not going to go to this banquet. I'm not going to go by myself, you know, and this and that. And my mother was upset that I couldn't go, but she respected my wishes and I didn't go. Well, Wally found out the week later. And he was so upset. He's like, why didn't you tell me? I would have taken you to that thing. I would have made sure you got to the thing. And I was moved by that. I was moved by the fact that he thought he would go there. And I said, yeah, but in my head, you're not really my dad. But you know what? Here's a guy who wanted to step into that role again.
But he's a naturally born dad.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bill, you're chomping at the bit over there. You got something else. I know you do.
I'm just thinking about everything that's being said, and it's reminded me of something that my daughter Tara had said to me. She said, you know, Dad, out of all of my friends, I'm the only one that has both parents involved in their lives. And I thought, what a comment on society. You know, fathers are critical to both sons and daughters. You know, sons need fathers to learn about how to be a godly man, how to fear God, sons need fathers to model for them about self-control, what a good work ethic is, why it's necessary to respect women. That's just to name a few. And you know, mothers would be really hard-pressed to teach sons these kinds of valuable life lessons. And for daughters, their entire self-image comes from how they're treated by their fathers. I know of so many friends who have daughters who are way out of bounds, you know, and it's unfortunate, but it's because they have one-parent families, and I think that has a lot to do with a lot of difficult things going on in our country today.
You know, and it's interesting that you say that. I have a daughter, I have three boys, and I have a daughter, and there's complete differences in all of them, and they all have some similarities, but you're right. You know, I've read about it, being a dad. I wanted to understand all of this stuff. And, you know, where do I fit in a daughter's life? You know, you have to remember that how they see you treat their mother is how they're going to maybe, perhaps, expect to be treated as a woman out in the world. And I know the world's different today than it was 30 years ago when I got married. But the reality is, I love my daughter's mother. I respect her. I care about her point of view. Even when we have conflict, we argue about things, we go back and forth, I always respect the fact that almost 99% of the time, the reason we're arguing is because I'm wrong about something, and I'll fully well admit that.
and you've been told that many times.
Yes. Or I take an opinion that when I tear it apart is because normally she's looking out for the best interest of everybody, and I'm looking at a more focused interest on something that I thought was important, and it causes conflict. Now, I'm not saying I'm wrong every single time. My point in general is that, you know, my wife does look out for all of us, and my daughter looks to see how I treat her mother and how I respect her mother. And I tell her all the time, you know, when you go out there, this is what guys are like, you know, because I'm concerned for her. I want her to understand that guys think differently than girls in situations. And a very good friend of mine made a quote one time that I found is interesting. He says, "I catch the fish, you cook the fish, and together we eat the fish." Now, it depends on which part of that equation you're in. You can say, so you go and catch it, and then the woman has to cook it. So you're keeping her in the kitchen. Well, no, she has everything. You want to go out and fish? You put on all that junk. You go out at 4 in the morning with the flies buzzing and biting, and you throw in a hook, and then you catch the fish. Come home, I'll cook it. I'll sit in the kitchen, and I'll cook it all up with the lemon, and it'll be wonderful, and together we'll eat it. It's the traditional hunter-gatherer type of a model, and that's really what has got humanity to the point that it is today. So I want to thank you guys very much for giving me your points of view and letting all our audience know. For people out there, if you're acting in the position of a dad, realize how important that is. If you're a mom and you have children and you don't have a dad in their lives, you know, you don't have to have a romantic relationship with someone, but there can be somebody that you can help to bring another point of view to these children. And as a struggling mom, I understand. My mom was a single mom after my father died, and she tried really hard to do both jobs. So I give everybody credit for this. For the dads that are out there, look out for your kids. It's the future of everything is how we take care of these kids. And to my dad, hey, what do you think of the neighborhood? We'll be back in a couple of minutes here at Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Welcome to round two here, Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. For a minute, I want to talk real quick about my sponsors. We have The Blue Magazine, which is www.thebluemagazine.com, a great magazine for law enforcement all across the country. So if you're a brother or sister law enforcement officer, give it a look. If you're in need of safety and security products, visitor management systems, mobile video systems, communicate anything to do with electronics, safety, and security, look out for A-Plus Technology and Solutions. That's aplustechnology.com, A-P-L-U-S technology.com, leaders in the field. Then there's my company, Pangaro Training and Management. You can find me on Facebook at Pangaro Training. Go take a look. You can find me at jpangaro.com. We'd love to hear from everybody out there. All right, so today we're in the neighborhood over here. We got Jimmy Giordano, our contrarian on the corner. James, how are you today?
I'm doing very good.
We got our man of faith, Bill Dallas, is here.
I am doing well as well.
And he's wearing a fine shirt today. I can tell you that's fantastic.
I'll give it to you.
And I don't know that it would fit. I'm a powerful rippling man, as they say. And then we have over here to my left, of course, America's own Jack Patterson.
Good to be here, Joe.
Welcome, everybody. Hey, listen, you know, one of the things we talk about in a neighborhood is we do this segment because it's kind of, we're all American kind of guys here. You know, we all have different kinds of jobs. We're all into different kinds of things. We all have our own opinions on stuff. But like most neighborhoods, we sit around, we just talk. Some of the things, the funniest things go on before this microphone is turned on. We have some great discussions. We say some idiotic things. We say some funny things. And then we turn the microphone on and we want to be more serious. We want to be more realistic and do the right thing. But the bottom line is, this group of guys here, I think, is like guys across the country, and girls too. I think, you know, I don't mean to differentiate that. People, let's say people across the country, we're living our lives in the world that we happen to have at this moment. We're now, we're in the moment. We're not in the past. We don't know what the future is going to bring. We're all out there living there today. And I've had a lot of phone calls and a lot of emails about the neighborhood. You know, who are these people? You know, what, you know, everybody wants on radio. You don't know what people look like. Well, I can tell you, this is a group of some handsome, handsome fellas that all have faces for radio. Let me tell you. But we're going to get some pictures up there, and we're going to get a little bio information out so that you can see who's in the neighborhood, because people seem to be very interested. So I want to take a couple of minutes to meet the hood and just know who's who and get a little bit about people. Now, I give introductions of each person, kind of based on either a personality trait or a lifestyle thing that they do, or something that has been powerful in their life. So whether it's like Jack, we're going to start out with Jack. I say he's an all-American guy, race car driver. Well, I don't know how many of you actually get behind the wheel of a race car, but Jack actually does. He's a motorcycle enthusiast. Years and years ago, you never forget, he says, you want to come for a ride on this motorcycle? And he had this huge, what was that, Yamaha what?
V-Max.
V-Max. You know what that is? That's called a car engine on two wheels. So he says, here, hop on the back. And we took off down my road, and we hit a puddle, and switched the gear, and the bike took off up in its back, and he's looking over at me as the front wheel comes off the ground. He goes, hang on for this. And at that point, I started praying, because I figured that would be the end of me. But Jack has always been an exceptional motorcycle guy, whether it's dirt. I mean, the guy's a dirt bike rider. He rides on the street. Then race cars. He says to me one time, oh, I got this race car. Who do you know's got a race car? I go to his house. He's actually building a race car. So, Jack, how did you get into race cars and motorcycles, and what's all that about?
Well, this all began when I was very young. My father was a racer. He was a motorcyclist, and since the time I can remember, I was surrounded by it. Family, friends, what have you. The area where I lived here in New Jersey was inundated with racing. The racetracks were literally surrounding my neighborhood. So my father knew everybody at the track, and he would sneak me into places where you weren't allowed to go. And so I was inundated in it. I was bathed in it.
Is it the excitement of racing? I mean, what's it like to be behind that wheel?
It was watching these men who were heroes to me, including my dad, watching them go around the track, or watching them ride a motorcycle, or do some kind of stunt on a motorcycle. To me, it was, I wanted to do what my heroes were doing. And it always intrigued me. And when I finally got the chance to get behind the wheel of a go-kart when I was a young child, mm-hmm. When I got my first motorcycle, a mini bike, when I was six, it went from there. My father said, I could never bring your mother to watch you ride the mini bike because you're out of your mind. And it's continued to this day. It's just something that draws me. Can't say I'm an adrenaline junkie, but
no. But everybody else but gets behind of a wheel with a helmet, straps themselves in, and goes 190 miles an hour. You know, it makes four left-hand turns, by the way. Let's just throw that out there, and goes round and round this track in an attempt to cut people off, to slide to the front of the pack. I find it very exhilarating, and it's even more fun when you know somebody behind the wheel. So that's our all-American race car driver, Jack. That's why I call him that, because it's amazing to watch this guy out there on the track. He's a fun guy, but don't get in front of him on that track, because he will beat you. All right, next up in our gang here at the neighborhood, we have Bill Dallas, our man of faith. Now, I say that, man of faith, and I don't want to give the impression that Bill is in church every single minute. He's not. But Bill is a spiritual person who's just been, the entire time I've known him, has had that overwhelming persona, is that he's about more than himself, that he is about God and the spiritual world, and he really is one of them people that fits it into his life. While he's not running around, you know, preaching at everybody, it is part of who Bill is and his persona. It's what informs him. So, Bill, what are you all about? At first, I heard a rumor that back in the day, you may have gone to Woodstock on top of everything else. So compare them two together, because we saw the pictures of Woodstock. There was no pants anywhere, and there was a lot of drugs going on. So what happened there?
Well, before I get started in that, I just want to say that, Jack, when you mentioned that you felt that your lifestyle had a lot to do with your dad and how much you felt like he was your hero, that just tugged at my heartstrings. I would have done anything to have that feeling. So, you know, I appreciate you sharing that.
And it was a great thing, Bill. And that's what it means to have a dad.
Yeah, that, and I only say that because I had a great dad, but he was kind of like an absent dad. He didn't teach me how to play ball. He didn't teach me a lot of things, but he did teach me a lot about life and loving his wife. So, that being said, Woodstock. Well, I can say a number of things about Woodstock. I
mean, Don't eat the brown acid, right?
Actually, it was brown organic mesk. So,
Chasing Justice does not condone the use of any type of illegal substances at any time.
Absolutely. I went up there. Matter of fact, I still have my Woodstock tickets, and the only reason that by the time we got up there, the gates were down, nobody was collecting tickets, and I was on the front page of the Asbury Park Press with my picture holding those tickets, so I have proof that I was there. It was an amazing experience, and I guess the most amazing thing was the incredible amount of people that were there. I went up with three other guys, and one of them lived in Bethel, which was near Woodstock, and he knew all the back roads, so we didn't have to get stuck on the New York State Thruway with all the other thousands of hippies like us. And so anyway, the most amazing thing there that was the amount of people and the crush of bodies. And, you know, you get involved in a crowd like that, you would think people are going to get angry and beat up and everything, but it was absolutely peaceful, except for the time when they said, don't eat that brown organic mesk. And then all you heard from the entire crowd was, uh-oh. You know? So, yeah, there were things there that shouldn't have been. There were mudslides that the people were sliding down. There was nude bathing in the poor farmer's pond. And I don't know where the cows would be going from there, but they wouldn't be going in that pond again.
No.
But, yeah, Woodstock. It was amazing. But contrasting that to my lifestyle now, I would have to say that was the old me. I put on the new me when I found Jesus. And I can honestly say that, yeah, I'd probably still go to Woodstock, but it would be with a whole new attitude. And it would be to go there to help people to understand why I'm in the lifestyle that I'm in now.
That's awesome. And so, you've been very forthcoming with that. And, you know, let me say this here, going out over the airways. There's and I know in religion I go to church, and the call there is to live as Jesus would want you to live. And you do that, Bill, and you stand up for that, and you make it a part of who you are. A lot of us hear that, and we don't do that. You know, for a lot of reasons, you're actually doing it. So I don't know if Jesus is going to notice it, but I've noticed it. And I'll put in a good word for you with the big guy. You know, hopefully I won't see him anytime soon, but I do listen to him as close as I can.
Yeah, the talk and walk the walk.
Very good. And now we have our contrarian, Jim Giordano. Now, I tease about Jim being a contrarian, and I've said this a couple times. The reason that I coined that phrase for Jim is because he always means the best for everybody, but he's not going to let you get away with just saying something if you can't back it up. So people will spout all kinds of nonsense, and Jim will call them out on it. And it sounds contrarian, but really what it is, it's calling people to back up their big mouths. So Jim, what's Jim all about?
You know, Joe, I was very reluctant even to have this discussion when you wanted to have these points made. I guess I grew up, I had a fairy tale life. I had a mother and father. They did well financially. I always had boats. I was a little bit spoiled. And as a result, I grew up late. I went to college only because I knew I had to do it, but I just wanted to extend my childhood for another 4 years, mm-hmm. in reality. So as I got older, I've become very risk averse, because even though there was my parents did very well, there was a point, I think in the 1990s, where the interest rates went up to like 20%, and it destroyed my father's business, and it destroyed him. He was also going through medical issues, and I saw the pain in his face, and since then, I decided that I won't take any risks. I'm very methodical in my own life. I see something wrong in this world. You call me that. I'm always talking conspiracy theories. There's something so wrong. I'm beginning to wonder whether these conspiracy theories have any merit. I know some of them sound wacko, but I see people. I mean, Europe is being destroyed. We are destroying ourselves internally in this country, and nobody sees it but me. Am I the one that's off, or is the rest of the population that's off?
That's very interesting, Jim, and I think that comes to you calling people out. Calling people out on what exactly do you see. Now, the conspiracies and all that, we joke about that stuff, and we're actually going to do an entire program on some of the conspiracy theories that Jim talks about, because they're really very interesting. And I heard something in law enforcement years ago that'll give you a little bit of hope as we move forward with our conspiracy thing, is that just because you have a feeling people are out to get you doesn't mean they aren't.
Okay. Especially you.
So who knows? And maybe that Rob Williams guy's maybe he's been calling up to see if he can take the end of the table over there. I don't know. Maybe, I'm just saying, it could be a theory.
To speak to Jim's conspiracy theories in the past, mm-hmm. he discussed the alien theory.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are coming here, they're looking at a planet full of idiots who feed upon themselves, who yes. war against themselves, mm-hmm. and who destroy themselves over mineral rights, over religious disputes. And for a civilized planet that they may come from, we have to look like two anthills warring with each other. It's just, it must be ludicrous.
It does. And I got to say, you've all been very revealing about some things about your lives, and I appreciate it. And I know the people out there that listen to us that like the neighborhood get to know you a little bit more. So thank you, fellas, for that. But as I listen to everybody's point of view, when I listen to what Bill is saying about seeing the world differently and changing yourself, and Jim, your point of view about there's something going on that's not right, I feel the same thing. I try and look at it historically. I always said I see history as a great big giant book. And if you look back at any time period, you'll see what happened as the world became a certain way. Certain countries started to rule the entire world. I'm going back a long time ago. And then things changed. The Roman Empire took over all the known world. And they were everything. And then you turn that page of history, and whatever happened, they receded and disappeared. And that has happened over and over again. We look at World War II, when we had the Nazis overrunning all of Europe. We fought it back, and that page of history turned. And it looked like democracy and justice might finally be the call of the day. Only to see where we are now, it seems we're letting that go. We're turning that page again, and I don't know what's on the next one. It's one thing to look backwards and see what happened, but to look forward and say we are giving up these rights that we fought for, we're giving up our traditional values, we're taking the institutions that brought us this far as a humanity and gave us stability and gave us the ability to become who we are today, and we're giving that all away under some false sense of a new enlightenment. Let everything just go, let everything be. And what happens? The reality, as I see it, is that when you take away any of those standardizing things that help keep us focused, is the way I like to look at it, not corralled, but focused, when you take that away, we're now going to fall back on the default position of humanity, which is to fall under the control of the strongest one in the room that's going to make the rules, and you all better follow along, or you're going to have a problem. And I see that coming. When you say Europe's falling apart, people don't want to talk about it because they made some mistakes there, and they have no way to get out of it. The page is turning now, and we're seeing it.
Just look at the G7 summit. I really admire Trump for what he did there, and most of the media, news media, they're upset. They're calling him names. You want to know something? He's the big gorilla on the block. Our economy is bigger than all six of those other nations together.
Mm-hmm.
We have a 4% GDP rate. They're barely getting out of 1%. And Trump is just calling the shots. And he's saying, listen, I am not going to make a deal to look good. I'm going to make a deal that's in the best interest of the American people, and at the very least, it has to be a fair deal.
Right. And isn't it refreshing to have a leader who believes in what we believe in, that's willing to stand up and actually say something, instead of making a deal, going along to get along, make everybody feel good? He's saying, no, BS, you need us, we don't need you.
How long can he has, I'm sorry, he has, he doesn't owe anybody anything. He wasn't a politician before. He's still not a politician. He calls it like it is, and people don't like that. And yet he's saying, he's proving that his way works. The mm-hmm. economy is flourishing. Our enemies are getting fewer. The biggest enemies are starting to cower. And because this man says what he means.
And he's willing to back it up with action.
And he's willing to back it up.
You know, I appreciate the fact that he's pointing out the obvious. I don't know why so few see it. We can't keep paying out and have nothing coming back in. If you want us to spend $12 billion into your economy, then you have to reciprocate.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, here on Chasing Justice, I want to thank the fellows here in the neighborhood for expressing themselves and getting us started. I think this conversation here at the end can go on and on. This is a whole another segment that we need to address, because there are important things to be said out there. So if you're listening and you want to send us a question, you can email it to me at jpangaro@AmericaOutloud. That's the letter J, P as in Peter, A-N-G-A-R-O, @AmericaOutloud.com. Send us your email commentary. The phone number also rings all the time, 732-600-8976. And take a look at my website, jpangaro.com. You can find us on Facebook. Chasing Justice has a Facebook page now, too. So if you go on Facebook and you look for Chasing Justice, we'd love to have you join and comment and join some of the things that are going on. And pretty soon we're going to have some pictures up there of all the fellas and the ladies, because we do have some ladies that have been on the show. We're going to get more and more ladies, because men and women together make everything better. We'll be back. Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Here we are, back in the neighborhood. We have the fellas. We have Jack Patterson, Pat Scott, Bill Dallas, Jim Giordano, and a special guest we have over here today, Mr. Rob Williams. So here we are, enjoying ourselves. We're trying to get off some of the heavy-duty stuff that goes on. We're going to talk about some more lighthearted stuff here in the neighborhood, as fellas are known to do. So the first thing I'm going to bring up to the group, I don't know if you have heard this out by you, but here in New Jersey, we've had a very strange incident where at a local high school, and it's a high-end high school too, it's a very nice place, they happen to find piles of human feces on the track and around the track for the last several weeks. So much so that the security department and the principal, I guess, decided to do some surveillance, some poopy surveillance, and see if they could figure out who was doing this. First of all, I want to know, how were they so sure that it was human feces and not something else? But apparently they knew that pretty well. And they did the surveillance, and it turns out they saw somebody actually defecating on the track. And it turned out to be, believe it or not, the superintendent from a surrounding school district. Guy's making $147,000-something, and he's defecating on the track of a rival high school. So if you don't think that's a strange thing, I don't know what is. Did anybody else hear about that, or is that just me?
No, we all did.
And we quiet about that. What do you think about that, Jim?
It just highlights the decadence of our education system.
And you're going to tell us you've never done anything like that?
Of course not.
No? Not at a high school, is what you're saying. Okay? So, you seem to have something to say, Rob.
I want to go back to past experience and ask Mr. Jim if he ever got his car stuck on a football field while he was driving around it in the middle of the night. And
I was young.
Okay, so you did do some things.
So now it all comes out many years later.
So let's face facts, guys. Obviously,
we've all done something crazy.
Everybody does something foolish, but as an adult, hopefully you move away from those things. Obviously, this gentleman didn't move away from them. And
of course, we're not saying he's guilty yet,
but
he has been charged with discarding stuff, I suppose is what it'd be called.
The older you get, the harder it is to find crazy things to do because you're too reserved anymore.
Is that what it is?
Unless you have a mimosa.
You're the senior member of our group. Have you thought of having another mimosa and running out to a little high school track?
Please don't come to my house.
Maybe down to the Walmart and have something to say? Now, Pat, you have had to see some crazy things in a retail establishment where you've been.
Absolutely. I had a customer one time steal a turkey. And how did she steal the turkey? She pretended she was pregnant. She put it up under her dress and walked with it between her legs, bulging out. So if that's not strange.
Well, I have to tell you, that is strange, and I'm glad she was pretending she was pregnant. I thought you were going somewhere else with that, and I don't know if I could have handled that particular story.
How did they use the turkey for Thanksgiving Day?
No.
Well, I'm going to tell you a couple of funny ones. Now you talk about turkeys. As a cop, I'm a brand new cop. And, of course, you get stuck working all the major holidays. So I'm working on Thanksgiving. Now, who would know? Thanksgiving, the day of love and family, and everybody gets together. We get called to the local apartment complex, head over there, having a dispute. I roll up as the second story window bursts open, and out comes the turkey, flying right out the window, crashes in the parking lot in a million pieces, and I can't believe it. And my partner, who was a senior officer, I said, they threw a turkey out the window. He says, yes, Thanksgiving, what'd you expect? I couldn't believe it. They actually throw turkeys out the window.
Be glad that's all that came out the window.
At Christmas one time, we had a husband and wife who were not getting along, so to speak. They weren't having a great time with it. And apparently he made a comment about one of her children from a previous marriage, which I have a guess there was probably mimosas or
Bloody Marys
involved. And the fight turned into taking the dinner that was being prepared for the guests later in the day, throwing at each other all over the house, and then the Christmas tree and all the presents ended up on the front lawn. The whole thing ripped out of the house and tossed down on the front, and I pulled up. I could not believe the Christmas stuff was laying all over the ground. And if you don't think that's strange, I don't know what to tell you.
So did you get new Christmas, presents for yourself?
No, of course you didn't take anything you got. You just documented all us there.
I have a funny story. One time we were down in a friend of mine's bar, and we were all talking, and there was a bowl of dirt and worms there. And the dirt and worms happened to get thrown all around the bar, and there might still be some pieces of it around here.
Well, you know what it is? When you're in a neighborhood, things happen when fellows get together. But it was interesting. One guy had to leave, and his wife wanted him to go home. So he was pretty good about it. He left her purse there on purpose. And when they got home, she says, I can't find my purse. He says, oh, I'll go back to the party and get it for you. And as he walked in, just in the middle of the dirt and worm conversation, I think there was something along the lines of, you wouldn't dare throw that at me. I'm a quick ducker. So I ducked down just as this individual walked in and says, hey, fellas, I'm back, with his white cashmere coat. Chocolate pudding all over the place.
That was an expensive dry cleaning bill.
I'm sure it was.
It was hilarious.
It was. And the next day, well, of course, that night I made everyone clean up. Not that I'm talking about us here in the neighborhood, but made everybody clean up. We scrubbed everything. We cleaned it really well. I thought it was beautiful when we went to bed. And the next day I knew it wasn't when I heard the lovely strains of my bride screaming, what the hell did you do down here? And I went down. There was chocolate pudding everywhere. I'm going to say that if we went to that bar right now in that basement, we looked around, we would still find a worm or two hidden in a rafter. It was actually pretty crazy.
But you keep saying we. It wasn't us.
No, it wasn't us. It was other group of fellas in another neighborhood somewhere in Jersey.
Very similar.
It wasn't this group right here. So, Rob, what's the craziest thing you've seen out there in the world?
You know, Joe, I got to tell you, you asked me to narrow it down. I deal with the public 24/7. It's nonstop. But I'll tell you, the guy next to me, you know what? Let me tell you. You know, he likes to take shot at educators, and you know what? He was taking shots at me at the fact that, you know, I don't work enough hours. And Joe, I get up at 4:30, and so what I started doing, I get up at 4:30, I go to the gym, and at 5:30, when I was leaving for work, I would stop at the nearby 7-Eleven, and I would use the payphone. This was a few years back. back, and I would call him, and he was sound asleep, and I was on my way to work, and he would answer the phone, and I would hang up, and I did this for about a month and a half, and I would call him and wake him up. And so one night, you know, after a couple rounds, we were talking, and he said something. I said, he brought up education again. I said, well, you know what? I get up every morning, and this is my regimen. I'm at my desk at 6 o'clock in the morning while you're still asleep. He goes, how do you know I'm still asleep? I said, because I call you at 5:30 when I'm leaving, and you're sound asleep.
Isn't this the same guy?
And then he had a few choice words, but he's sound asleep, you know, and he's telling me how hard he's working. So, you know what? He doesn't have a lot of credibility. I think he
isn't
also...
Isn't this the guy that complains about cop and teacher pensions? And
yes.
He has every Friday off.
Every Friday.
Worker has
and off?
And he works from home.
He works from the golf course. You own a golf course?
He's the one that unscrews the light bulb on his license plate.
Joe, I played golf with him 2 weeks ago. He lost his ball.
There was a green dot on it.
He had it. No. There was a green square on your ball. That you
Square
played with the whole time.
Okay, hang on a second. Before you tell this story, we have to have a little background. One of the topics we like to talk about here is truth and justice. So we're going to talk a little bit about truth when it comes to playing sporting events or to any type of a competitive thing. Some people will do anything to win, including not play by the rules or make the rules their own. So say you had a golf ball with a green mark, not necessarily a square, but a green mark. And it went off into the field, and you went looking for it. Rob, you'd like to continue now.
Yes. So, as he's telling me that he found his ball about 20 yards further up, and it was right there.
Perfect shot.
And as he's getting ready to hit it, I see look back, and I see a ball about 20 yards back. I go over, and I said, isn't this your ball with the green square on it that you've been playing the whole day? And we're on the 17th hole now. He's had that same, that ball with the green square on it the whole time. So now, oh, that's my ball. Now, when the other guy we were playing with, he was hitting his ball. And now this had a check on it. Now, we all know that a check doesn't look like a square. Well,
close enough.
It was, yeah.
It depends on where you went to school.
Now,
it's golf.
Now, all of a sudden, after the game's over, he's like, and I'm busting his chops. He's like, you're not going to tell anybody about this, are you? Don't tell anybody about this. So, obviously, you know, he had a little guilt with him, too. And I might add, I won the game.
Are we gonna give Jimmy a little?
You want to say anything?
Back?
No, I mean it was
true.
His subjective interpretation of those.
this is the engineer speaking. The subjective interpretation of my actions on that particular day were misinformed and everything.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you, I took Pat over here and Jim to an event. I'm on the board of directors for the New Jersey Narcotics Enforcement Officers Association, a tremendous group of people in New Jersey that worry about drugs and drug sales and all that kind of stuff. And they have an annual dinner. So I say, who are two individuals that I know that would come to this? So let me look around the neighborhood and see who I could find. James, would you like to come? Of course. And Patrick, would you like to come? This was the first time they ever met. This is the important part of the story. So they meet in the parking lot. We're having a good time. We start to have a couple of adult beverages. And they were doing the raffle, the giveaway. Well, Jim is a big fan of Rutgers University. That's where he went to school. It's a fine university in New Jersey. And he is an alumni of Rutgers. And there was a big, beautiful helmet there that you could win in a raffle. And Jim kept saying, oh, I'm going to win that helmet. I'm going to win it. I really want that helmet. And him and Pat were having a good time talking. And about 3 hours later, you could see that the combination of the two fellows was very interesting. The arguing that was going on. And Pat says, hey, if I win that helmet, you know what I'm going to do with it? And Jim says, you're going to give it to me. He says, no, I'm going to throw it in the river. This is the kind of thing you're dealing with the green check marks or the squares when it comes to these kind of things.
But he didn't win.
No, he didn't win that night. I think I won golf clubs that night. I think I was the big winner that night. Well, gents, I appreciate this this open free flow of the neighborhood. And really, this is the essence of America Out Loud. We are really five guys here. And we're talking about the important things of the day, but we're also relaxing. We're having a good time together. This is communication. I think this comes up in all of our talks and all of our segments, that we should communicate, relax, get to know people, have a good time with it. As we're going to move out, we have a couple of minutes here, and I just wanted to ask the group a couple questions about what's going on in the world right now. What do you think is the biggest problem we have to deal with today in America?
Today, I think we're dealing with terrorism. I think that's the worst of the subjects that we're dealing with currently. With everything that's going on in Washington right now, I think the focus still has to be on the terroristic threat. Everybody seems to talk about what it's going to be, when it's going to be, and from who. And I think that's the worst thing that we face right now.
It's kind of quieted down, though, hasn't it?
Like, yeah, it's
haven't really had a big incident in a while.
No, we haven't had. We were having quite a few videos coming from ISIS.
Yeah.
Quite a few things happening in London and in America and in Germany. And it seems to have quieted quite a bit. Why this is occurring at this point in time, I don't know. It's still occurring some places in the world, but luckily we've been spared.
Well, we just had a guy in Canada, right, run down a bunch of people, and they said that he wasn't ISIS-inspired, but we haven't heard the whole full story of that yet. Mm-hmm. Pat, how about you? What do you think? What's going on?
Well, going off of what Jack said, I think the worst thing in the world is how we think about each other. I think trust is a huge issue. Nobody trusts anybody nowadays. And it goes with what you said. We have to get to know each other. We have to get to know our neighbors. Mm-hmm. And we really don't. So when we go outside, I know I look around. I don't trust anybody. Who's behind me? And that's what I feel is a huge issue.
Okay. And now we are our man of faith here on America Out Loud. What do you think is one of our...
I think we've lost our moral compass. I really do. Years ago, the slightest thing on TV, if someone was... would say the word damn, that was a big deal, you know. Now they use all sorts of four letter words and the F word and all this kind of stuff, and everything is available, and the kids that are seeing these things, you could watch a Disney show that is perfectly, you know, innocent, and then it pops to a commercial that shows lingerie and what are the angels, the Victoria's
Secret
things come on, and you know, next thing you know, your kid's asking me, "What? How come mommy doesn't wear those things?" or something like that, something crazy.
Well, that's a question actually they ask mom.
Yeah, right, okay.
But
I'm serious.
House, but,
we've really lost that moral compass, and you know, today, everything is allowed.
Sure.
You know,
no boundaries.
Yeah, you know, and
Jack.
Just to add what Bill was talking about, I think it's a lack of, lack of a better term, it's a lack of class. Mm. There doesn't seem to be a lot of that anymore.
We're not worried about that anymore.
Well, we're not worried about what's inappropriate, because the scale of what's inappropriate, as Bill said, is off the scale for anybody who grew up in our generation.
Sure. Mm. Anything goes.
I think it's value. It is. It goes back to values, family values. Goes back to ethics, accountability. There's a lot of things that go into place there, but they all, you know, they all fall into those areas. You know, basically
a general degradation of society.
Yeah, basically, some people feel like, you know, they're free to do whatever they want, and you know, freedom's a great thing, but you know what? There has to be some boundaries there too.
Right, Jim. Now you've taken a lot of hits tonight here in our
men
hanging
it.
Around. He is, but I got to tell you, everybody, you're gonna call me and you're gonna write to me, and tell me why'd you pick on that guy so much. Jim, believe me, he can handle his own. He can give it out as well as he can take it. So, what do you see, Jim?
Definitely, it's the corruption of the American government. I think that the biggest threat to this country since World War II comes from within. Just today, there was a judge that. Basically slammed Mueller for going outside of the scope of what he was charged to do. And Manafort is now probably going to jail. There's so many people who are working for government, who are losing their houses. We mentioned last week Flynn. But there's a lot of lower echelon people who now have to lawyer up because they're afraid of the attack that's coming from government and coming from Mueller. And that is really very problematic for the reason where nobody's going to want to work for the government any longer.
Perfectly. With that, along with that, well, the President of the United States can have his own files just confiscated for, you know, just for, because someone wants to charge him with something. That's crazy. You know, Cohen lost all of those files that... You know, Trump didn't agree to anything like that to allow them to take them.
All his clients lost their stuff.
Yeah.
Personal stuff.
Yeah. I mean, those. I think Mueller overstepped his authority than that. I think he's going to pay for it in the end.
You hear the news media, they're making a big deal of the Stormy Daniels event that happened 12 years ago. And, yeah. You know, yes, the American people have the right to assess character of a president, and I would agree with that. But they're making it into a legal issue. How is this a legal issue?
Yeah. Stormy Daniels is going to be nothing, you know, down the road. We're going to forget all about her. She's going to be nobody.
She's just making money right now.
That's it.
That's all she's doing.
All right, fellas.
That's her pension.
I want to thank you all for your opinions there. Now, listen, I like to end things on a positive note. I know there's a lot for us to look at that looks down. But I still have some children who have the world in front of them, as I do, many of you do out there who are listening, and some of the guys here also. The world can be a great place if we make it a great place. You know, everybody says they have to change this, they have to fix this, they have to change the way things are done. Who is they? They are us. We are the they. It starts with us. It starts with a group like this in our neighborhood and what you can do in your neighborhood. Talk things up that are positive. Take a stand for things that are good. Say something when something's just not right. Tell your children about what is right and wrong and what things mean things in life. That's where we make this change. We can't wait for them to fix it. We are them. It's up to us. So thanks for being with us this week. We love it here on Chasing Justice with all of you. I want to thank our sponsors, A-Plus Technology and Security, aplustechnology.com, Blue Magazine, bluemagazine.com, my company that's out there. You can certainly email me at jpangaro@americaoutloud. Take a look at my website, jpangaro.com, and for all those who can spell Pangaro, it's the letter J, P as in Peter, A-N-G-A-R-O.com, and for MCON IT. All great patriot companies that try to do the right thing for everyone. Have a good week. And remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. See you.